right. Good morning, everybody. Today is Wednesday, October 7th, 2015. And this is Before the First Cup with Jules here on UCY.TV. Happy Wednesday, everybody. It is 59 degrees and partly cloudy here in upstate New York. Looks like it is going to rain again today. It didn't yesterday, but it sure looked like it. All right, where did we leave off yesterday? We titled the show Li-Fi Wireless, Smart Gloves, Mini Brains, and Robot Rights. And if you remember the show, it was pretty crazy. There was some insane stuff that we talked about. Internet via light from light bulbs. The smart gloves that'll prevent any type of schizophrenic, sign language interpreters from showing up on stage anymore. Actually, the gloves were pretty cool. You could, sign, and it had a speech to text chip in it, so it would actually type out a transcript, it would speak, and it would provide it on a screen. Mini brains were 25 cents a piece. Step up and get them right now for experimentation, grown in a petri dish. And then, of course, robot rights. They want us to feel bad for the robots. And who was it? I don't remember the name of the company. It might have been Toyota, I think, who created Peppa, the humanoid robot, and they were making new owners sign agreements that they won't do anything inappropriate with the robot, and they are calling for robot laws and morals to be in place. I mean, like I said, let's take them all out. No robots for you or me. All right, so today I think we're going to change gears a little bit. I ran across a couple things that were non-technology related that I thought we should share, and I probably should have shared them yesterday, but I was still kind of out of it trying to catch up on sleep from my busy weekends working on new projects for the network. One story I came across, this is something that had I still been in the industry doing my engineering stuff, I probably would have read this long ago, but I did not know that Cisco's CEO, John Chambers, who had been their CEO for the whole time that I was doing networking stuff, has stepped down. He retired finally after 20 years, and a new guy has taken the helm. Now, if anyone knows anything about Cisco, and this is CISCO, the maker of Internet Backbone Hardware, versus SYSCO, Cisco, the industrial food manufacturer. Cisco, the hardware manufacturer, has a new CEO, and the story I saw yesterday out of the New York Times was that he is envisioning big changes. Now, I gotta tell you, Cisco is the backbone of the internet. I would say a good 90% of backbone routers that exist at the internet service providers are probably Cisco. You know, the Chinese company Huawei, or Huawei, I think their name was Huawei. They had it out with Cisco many years ago, and Cisco had accused them of stealing their code, their operating system, because it looked very much like Cisco. And it looks like they got that all settled legally a long time ago. But they're cheap. Their products are cheap, so I've been seeing a lot of them out there. But Cisco is still really the big boy when it comes to internet networking. And so what Cisco says is something that you should listen to. It's kind of something like where Bill Gates would come out and do his yearly address, or the IBM 5 for 5, looking 5 years in the future. It's something that you should pay attention to. So I thought we should, considering all the stuff we've read about technology and some of this freaky stuff that's coming down the pike, we should probably read about what Cisco's new CEO is envisioning for changes to the company. So I'm going to check this out, and then we're going to go into some more global stuff. If Cisco's new chief executive has his way in a couple of years, he will have a very different company. And I got to tell you, too, what kills me is that I'm just so over doing basic engineering, routers, switches, fiber. You know, I mean, it's once you've done it 1,000 times, there's nothing different about it, and it gets kind of boring. But some of the stuff that we've been talking about, and I got to tell you, I mean, they're saying that a lot of the Cisco employees have no clue about artificial intelligence and the Internet of Things and whatever, makes me think that maybe somewhere in the future I might try and infiltrate back into the system. anyway, he sees his company in a couple years will look very differently. And in his first big public statement since he took the helm in July, Charles H. Robbins said Cisco would move away from selling individual switches and routers, which is very surprising to me. The plumbing of the internet and other modern communication systems. Instead, Cisco will stress integrated parts with lots of software so that new applications and business uses could be readily deployed. Quote, companies do not want to be in the business of putting things together, he said. A massively distributed network is where we are headed. He also said that Wall Street, we need to start seeing Cisco in new ways as it moves to revenue models closer to those of cloud computing companies like Ding Ding Salesforce.com, somebody that I had seen as an industry leader way back in 2004 when I bought like 10 shares of stock at, I don't know, they were some insane price, $4 or $8. Last time I looked, they were through the roof, and I think they split 4 times or 10 times, some insane numbers. Since 2004, guys. Wish I would have bought 1,000 shares of those. But anyway, they want to move. And by the way, Salesforce.com was also one of the first companies that started offering software as a service, like I've talked about many times, in regards to the electronic health records and Obamacare putting all your stuff online. These pharmaceutical companies will be able to subscribe as a service to databases to access your information and pay $29.95 a month for access, right? That's that software as a service model, and there's lots of money in it. Anyway, it says that they are going to move their revenue model to those of cloud computing companies like Salesforce.com with lots of revenue based on subscriptions. A darling of investors during the dot-com boom, and yes, any one of us who invested in them lost lots of money in that as well. Cisco shares, when the stock market crashed, Cisco shares have put in a lackluster performance, yet 80% of the world's internet traffic passes through Cisco machinery. And I'll tell you why there's been lackluster performance. Because the reason that Cisco, and trust me, I was a Cisco engineer for the reseller that I work for, so I understand how they work. And pretty much how Cisco won deals is that they would drop their pants, especially in a large institution, something that would be able to use as a promotional brief after the installation. And they would give it away with 60%+ discount. So though they were selling mega amounts of hardware and installation services, they were basically giving it away to make themselves the world's leader. Continuing, quote, we believe that we can manage them, Mr. Robbins says, the analyst covering his stock, adding that it was unclear what the end state would look like as a business like collaboration and security increasingly moving to subscriptions and traditional hardware is sold by the piece. And pretty much what's going to happen here, especially now that Cisco is jumping on the software model and cloud computing, is that a lot of these hardware devices that are on our desktops right now and in our networks will probably become obsolete in the future. I mean, I could very easily see with this federal government / corporate collaboration that Obama announced back in July, I believe, you know, to keep us safe from hackers, and well, we have such a cybersecurity issue now, that what they're going to do is take the security into the cloud. So right now, most of us have routers with a firewall on them, protecting us from outside intrusions, and our internet connection connects to that router, and then it's got some sort of switch ports or hub ports on it that we're connecting, and probably wireless, connecting to our internal network of our house and our businesses. But in the future, I could definitely see it being hosted with some sort of virtual private network that goes in a tunnel from the endpoint location to some big cybersecurity center that's scanning all your traffic. And, you know, don't think just by scanning traffic that that's going to keep you safe, because they'll be scanning traffic and sniffing traffic and probably databasing traffic. And, wow, isn't it nice when everything is centralized into the cloud? Anyway, back to the story. It was hardly apparent that Mr. Robbins wanted such a different company in July. And how nice, too, it coincided right with this big corporate federal government agreement to work together. in July when he took over from Mr. John Chambers, who ran Cisco for 20 years. Mr. Chambers had long admired IBM and had sought many times to build up large consulting-based businesses similar to IBM. And yes, that's something that Cisco was very good at. They had lots of consulting engineers pretty much doing the same thing that I did. The Cisco engineers were string too, and I knew a lot of them because we used to work together. A lot of the guys that I dealt with used to work with me at my first big tech job as network engineers over there. But we would pull them in when we had some really complicated network or we had some very large projects in the millions of dollars and you needed second string to be able to ensure that the installation was going to go correctly. Mr. Robbins states, I do not want to end up there, according to the IBM model. And hey, IBM has been around for 20, 30 years. I don't know exactly when IBM started, but they were the hardware leader from the very beginning. IBM was pretty much with the PS2 desktop computer. They were the first commercially branded PC that everybody knew and hated. Though, actually, I don't know. The PS2 was pretty cool. It had a mouse, you had a floppy drive, and you had a computer screen, and it really was the first step beyond the green screen terminal computing, which, how ironic, that is pretty much what they're pushing us back to. We're not going to have green screens anymore. But if anyone has taken a look at like some of those Chromebooks that are out there, really cheap, Google's notebook that pretty much does everything in the cloud. It feeds your applications off the internet. It also stores all your data to the internet. It is doing what we started out in back in the very beginnings of networking. Everything is centralized. Your endpoints are dumb. And it's really easy not only to make certain that your endpoints are protected for security purposes, but also to be able to scan anything that's saved up in the cloud, right? All right, anyway, back to this story. He says, I don't want to end up there, speaking of the IBM model. And that was in reference to being a hardware company. Instead, he said that his salespeople would try to work with, quote, multiple touch points. And, yeah, that's always been a key phrase at Cisco. Throughout a company, they infiltrate and they hit everyone. They hit the IT director. They hit the CFO. They hit the CEO. They hit the CIO. Then they even get in with some of the people that are end users working with it. But the Cisco salespeople are pretty slick, I'll tell you that. They have multiple touch points throughout a company, in particular between industrial machine operators and information technology departments, to get machines online. Cisco is planning big investments in analytic tools to help automate both large-scale data centers and billions of objects, ding, ding, enchanted objects as part of the Internet of Things tied to the Internet. And let's see what they just said here. Big investments in analytic tools. Now, what my husband and I work on here is building analytic tools and dashboards that allow you to pull in multiple different feeds into one simple, easy to use interface where you can then draw information out of statistics that you are acquiring through all of these online interactions. And that's pretty much, I mean, Cisco's talking about doing this on a global scale. And if you realize that they own, they said 80% of the world's backbone, 80% of all the global traffic passes through Cisco devices. You know, they all have remote access connections. They're all tied in with iOS code. I believe that's what Cisco called it, iOS, and that was long before Apple calling it that. And in which case, they will have access to those devices, and they will have access to pull analytics from those devices. So put on a seatbelt. And Cisco has been involved in meetings with the White House. So I am seeing here that we are adding one big bad wolf to the story of spying in my professional assessment of the story. On Monday, Mr. Robbins announced a deal with FANUC, F-A-N-U-C, it's an acronym, FANUC America, which has some 300 1,000 industrial robots in factories to carry out preventative maintenance based on Cisco's artificial intelligence products. Now, who knew that Cisco was also building artificial intelligence products or had industrial robots? And we've read lots of stories about the robots are coming. It's kind of a fishtail from the end of yesterday's show. Yes, the robots are coming, and industry leaders such as good old Bill Gates and Elon Musk have pointed to the fact that, yeah, well, the robots are probably all going to take our jobs too. So Cisco is helping now to facilitate that as well, add them to the long list of tech companies. All right, back to the story. Of course, that means a lot of artificial intelligence and other computing skills that Cisco apparently lacks. They've hired a lot of AI guys and people with strong mathematical backgrounds, says Robbins. Zohar Brishing, Cisco's chief technology officer, said that some of the new features would also go into existing Cisco products as software modifications. There you go. Just an iOS upgrade, and now you have AI on your router, and those changes will be announced in the next several months. The move by Cisco comes as many of the old technology giants, including Microsoft, Oracle, Intel, HP, IBM, and Dell, struggle to adapt to new businesses around cloud computing, mobile technology, and sensors. And yeah, we've read about all of this. I mean, it's coming. They are all changing, and they're all getting into the game. Mr. Robbins appears to believe he can adapt to Cisco by changing it from a company that hauls bits around with some software to help enable a few functions. And the new version is a company with a much greater awareness of what is inside a business's overall system and how it needs to work. And I mean, exactly. They all need to get into the game to be able to now suck your data, whether you be a business or you be an end user. They need to get their hands on your data, and that is exactly what this is about. It is global governance, it is global intelligence, and every single one of us is going to be in a database, sliced and diced with everything we do down to a cellular level once they emerge databases with identification. And I'm going to predict here that biometrics, I've read a bunch of stories about it, but biometrics and being able to authenticate. Now, we've seen some stuff about them announcing, you know, how difficult it is to remember all those passwords, those pesky passwords. And so they're going to fix it for us. We'll be able to authenticate to the internet, and those pesky anonymous users that go out there and leave comments apparently are the reasons for data breaches everywhere. You know, anonymity gives you the ability to do bad things, so we have to make sure we know it's you. There was another story here talking about global governance and mobile, you know, mobile computing, mobile phones. I mean, if you look at that Gartner quadrant, the last time I looked, they were predicting this astronomical growth in mobile computing over the next 5 years from all these regions of the planet that don't have internet. And we have Google as well as Facebook that are launching global internet plans. I saw a story yesterday. Facebook is now planning to launch satellites in 2016. Yes, Facebook is to launch a satellite that will provide internet access to remote parts of Africa. And it seems that that is Google's target area as well. Mark Zuckerberg has announced, in partnership with French-based provider Eutelsat, Facebook hopes the first satellite will be launched in 2016. We're going to keep working to connect the entire world. Well, you know, that's what they all keep saying, and how it's going to help these third world nations bring themselves up to the level of the Western world and adapt connect them to all the great things that are the internet. But if you look under the covers, which we do on this show on a daily basis, the ulterior motive for connecting the entire world is to have control over the entire world. So, Mr. Zuckerberg, I see right through your big, fat, bold-faced lie. It's not a wonderful thing. Run away screaming. You don't want them to know where you are. Anyway, he says, we're going to keep working to connect the entire world, even if that means looking beyond our planet. Mark Zuckerberg, Zucker Mucker, says in a Facebook post. The project is part of Facebook's internet.org project, which has come under fierce criticism in some countries. Well, good. At least some people are standing up. In some areas, particularly India. And hey, you know, one thing that's interesting too, we dug back a few months ago into the entire connection between mobile devices and computer use and chemical reactions that occur inside the brain, that whole dopamine reaction, dopamine being the addictive chemical, that whole region of the brain that interacts with your mobile devices that literally makes you an addict. And I saw something yesterday about teenagers. There was some poll that they check their Facebook posts at least 100 times a day. I would say some people are even worse than that. It is very apparent to me that there is an addictive component to this. And, you know, by taking the rest of the world and addicting them to the internet, how is this a good thing? I mean, it's all about control, people. All right, in some areas, particularly in India, businesses reacted angrily to the plan, saying it gave Facebook and its partners an unfair advantage in developing internet markets. Internet.org is experimenting with different ways of providing internet to hard-to-reach places. Recently, the company told of how it was planning to use a custom-built drone, and we read about this one, to beam down connectivity. And yes, I'm sure that drone will only be beaming internet. It says this latest initiative looks to use satellite technology to provide affordable internet access. And over the last year, Facebook has been exploring ways to use aircraft and satellite to beam down internet access to communities from the sky, said Zuckerberg. To connect people living in remote regions, traditional connectivity infrastructure is often difficult and inefficient. And yeah, I mean, they're not going to be able to lay lines in some place like Africa or India. So we need to invent new technologies. And now satellite internet is not new. Definitely Facebook satellite internet is new. This is in a statement, Eutelsat said that its users on the ground would be able to use, quote, off-the-shelf products to access the service when it launches in the second half of 2016. The capacity is optimized for community and direct-to-user internet using affordable off-the-shelf consumer equipment, and Eutelsat and Facebook will each deploy internet services designed to relieve pent-up demand, oh yes, for connectivity from the many users in Africa beyond range of fixed and mobile terrestrial networks. Several companies already provide internet by satellite, but it is a costly option beyond the reach of most people in the developing world. So there you go. We have Facebook, who is now jumping into the internet service provider game. Now, talking about global governance, we've seen all kinds of stuff going on right now about the UN. The UN is getting their dirty little fingers into a lot of things. There was something at one point that we have read. I want to find here. There was a story about the United Nations taking over portions of the internet, and we had talked about that a long time ago. There was this global consortium of companies. Here we go. UN signs internet. This is from 2012, and I know we covered this. Okay, yeah, skip the ad. UN signs internet regulation treaty. This is from 2012 in December. A controversial new global treaty on telecom regulations was signed on Friday by 89 international telecom union members, despite U.S. objections to potential regulation of the internet. And I have to say, I kind of at first gave it a thumbs up that the U.S. did not sign onto this agreement. But when I really started thinking about it, if all these other nations around the world are signing onto this new U.N. regulation, and of course it's to keep you safe, right? They're going to set standards between countries, for their internet and for electronic transactions, to be able to then provide protection and standardization. But anyone outside of that group who's going to want to do business with those other countries are probably going to be required to maintain the same standards. So, wait, slippery slope, because I see it coming. There was some stuff that happened yesterday, the day before, that really sets the stage for this. So let me finish reading this about the UN internet regulation. So I say, this is the article, quote, I say to the 89 states that signed the treaty, thank you, says Mohammed El Ghanim, chairman of the World Conference on International Telecommunication, organized by who? Oh, the ITU in Dubai. 55 countries did not sign the treaty. And he says, I hope that the 55 states that said that they do not want to sign the treaty or need to hold consultations to think again about the treaty that enters effect in January of 2015. So I didn't realize that has gone into effect now, says Ghanem, who is chief of the UAE's Telecommunications Regulatory Authority. And of course, we know how free and open the UAE is for their people and providing freedom of speech. Yes, and human rights. The treaty that is the first update to the international telecommunications regulations that were agreed upon in 1988 stirred controversy as internet operators, activists, and countries led by the United States objected to reference to the internet deemed to be paving the way for government control. And two things that have happened since this point that tells me that the U.S. is talking out of both sides of their mouth and they're full of shit is, number one, ICANN, which is the Internet Naming Registrar. So anytime you buy a domain name, UCY.TV, it used to go through ICANN. ICANN was administered by the United States. I believe it was last year or the year before, that was now moved to an international organization. So the United States no longer is in charge of domain name registration. But secondly, what happened, and I think it was this year, was the Telecommunications Act that now put the FCC in charge of the internet as a utility such as the telephone industry or terrestrial radio. The FCC, a federal organization, is now officially in charge of the internet. And how interesting, we've been seeing major internet issues since that time. And then what followed that shortly thereafter was the technology meeting at the White House, which I dug into that. They had had lots of White House meetings over the course of the Obama administration with CEOs of large technology companies such as Google, such as Microsoft, such as Cisco. They've all been visiting to discuss quote-unquote cybersecurity. So don't think that any of this is an accident. And then as of July, of course, they announced this big private federal partnership to be able to keep us all safe. All right, back to the story. So there was a big protest that stirred controversy as internet operators, activists, and countries led by the United States objected to reference to the internet deemed to be paving the way for government control. But the ITU, this International Telecommunications Organization, the ITU chief Hamandan Touré insisted on Friday and this is in 2012, that the treaty had nothing to do with the internet, despite a non-binding resolution calling for action to promote internet growth. This conference was not about the internet, not about internet control, he said, or internet governance. And indeed, there are no provisions to the internet, said ITU Secretary General to the participants at the signing ceremony. But what I'm going to tell you is that the ITU teleconferencing, telecommunications was the phone network. That's the phone network that is now merged with the data network that is now merged with the internet that, oh, hey, lo and behold, in the United States, that is now part of the same regulatory organization in the United States, namely the FCC. So you know what? I called total and absolute bullshit 3 years ago. It might not have been, but how nicely they clicked all the little pieces into place in 2015. To now make them part of telecommunications. The United States on Thursday in 2012 slammed the treaty, saying that the proposed text opened the doors to government regulation of the internet. And, you know, we were just biding our time. We were playing this game just like we had all the big tech companies turning around and saying, no, we're not giving your information to the government. We are protecting your privacy in the front end, but in the back end, I can tell you from a fact, because I have friends that work all over in the tech industry still, that all of these big tech companies that have your information streaming in and streaming out of their data centers have dedicated centers that flag, bag, and tag you at the request of law enforcement. And in the middle of all this, since 2012 until now, don't forget we also had the Microsoft Cyber Patrol Center that opened up that is now tracking down, you know, online internet crime everywhere with mapping, tracking, bagging, and tagging. I mean, this has just been a very slow progression, so nobody noticed like boiling frog. Anyway, this non-binding resolution to the internet recognizes, among other things, that, quote, all governments should have an equal role and responsibility for international internet governance and for ensuring the stability, security, ding ding, and continuity of the existing internet and its future development and the future of the internet, according to the text of the agreement. This conference has no effect on the internet at all, they told reporters, insisting that the treaty gives explicit protection to free speech. Yeah, I'll believe that one when I see it in the AUE. In a preamble, we have a special article, he says, member states affirm their commitment to implement these regulations in a manner that respects and upholds human rights obligations. But just remember, because I'm going to add this, just remember your human rights and your freedom to speech only goes as far as they say they do, because freedom of speech also can make you a terrorist, or it can make you some sort of insurgent speaking about things that have not been approved. The head of, and I mean, they already have filtering software. I could tell you that there's something going on right now, and I don't know if it's just me or if they added some new filtering to the United States, but England's already doing it. Of course, they passed all that under the name of protecting children and child porn, where they put a proxy, which is, I mean, it could be as simple as another computer. It could even be just a piece of software. It could be a whole data center, but outside of England, with its big incoming internet pipe from wherever they're getting it from a tier one provider, they now have a proxy server or a proxy cloud that is scanning all incoming and outgoing internet to filter and block, if necessary, any type of quote-unquote inappropriate internet traffic. Now, I had read that the end user can opt in or opt out. I don't know how true that is. Some of my English friends over there should let me know. I know we do have listeners out of the UK, as to whether or not you've been noticing lots of blocked websites. But a few of our friends that come into chat, there have been times when we've dropped a link in the chat and they just can't get there. Well, one of the things that I've been noticing on all of my computers here and it's been very marked in the last week or so, is anytime I go to Google and I type in a term, there is now a pause, and it is a very noticeable pause, where almost like my hitting enter creates no response on my computer, and it sits there for a second, and then it bounces to a page that in the URL it says about colon blank. Now, I know a long time ago there was a virus called the about blank virus, where it would reset all of your home pages to that about.blank. So you would go and try to open up your browser and it would just be a blank page and you couldn't go anywhere. But this isn't like that. It's almost like this about.blank page is thinking. It's like a page that they put up there, so it is thinking about whether or not they're going to allow me my search results that I punched in through Google. And then after about 30 seconds or so, either I will get my search results, or my search results will flash on the screen really quick, boop, for a second, and then go back to about.blank or about colon blank. So I don't know. That almost seemed to me with the pause, like all my traffic is now being rerouted somewhere through a proxy server. So I need to do some more investigation into that. I was talking to my husband about that this morning, and he said he was noticing some stuff like that as well. So I think we need to put some mega sniffers on this network and start seeing if they have anything to do with Ukraine or if there's something more dubious afoot internal to our own country. I told you I was seeing Ukraine traffic coming in here too. All right, let me finish reading this so we can get on to some of the new news. Anyway, this non-binding resolution to the internet recognizes that among all things, yes, 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 that they're going to provide equal access and our human rights, and it's only going to be for the security, continuity, and future of the internet. But the head of the U.S. delegation, Terry Kramer, said on Thursday in 2012 that he could not sign the treaty as currently drafted because it included some language, quote, seeking to insert governmental control over internet governance, unquote. And I gotta say, I can guarantee you that somewhere along the way, we've either inked on or given a wink or a secret handshake to say, don't worry about it. You guys keep it going. We gotta keep it on the QT here until we're ready to roll out this huge mega takeover of the internet. And trust me, please trust me, and this isn't just hearsay, I watch a lot of things, and I'm telling you, this is what they're doing, the dirty bastards. The U.S. has consistently believed and continues to believe that the UN treaty should not extend to internet governance or content, he added. And like I said, they're liars, so let's put that out there. So we have nice sound bites showing how free the United States is. But on the backside, let's work on getting rid of all of your freedoms. U.S. lawmakers had voted unanimously to oppose any efforts to give the United Nations new authority to regulate the internet, and a variety of internet activists and U.S. firms. And here's the oxymoron. The U.S. firm was led by Google. Yes. Also warned against new regulations. Google, that is just so in bed in every way, shape, or form with every level of government. Don't forget about Google X's DARPA project, DARPA X, whatever they're calling it, to be able to create Skynet, the self-aware protection to the perimeter of the internet that be able to search and destroy. Says what is clear. Oh, internet giant Google, which has been vocal in criticizing the conference, and Google was also the one that was sitting around saying, no, we're not giving your information to the feds. No, we know everything about you, but we're not giving that to anybody. Yeah, that same Google with the tagline, we are not evil, Google. Google, who has now the parent company Alphabet, and one of those underling companies called Calico, is working on immortality and all kinds of crazy other things. Google, that has Kurzweil, the absolute freak transhumanist, as their head of engineering. Yes, that Google. Google says that many governments taking part in the meeting in Dubai proved that they wanted increased censorship, and it supported countries who were rejecting the treaty. Well, if there was any question, and we're going to see, hopefully this does not knock me off the air like it did when I first connected this morning. I'm going to try and connect this computer because I want to play a story that came out yesterday out of Reuters about UN. And it's not playing. Wow, this really is going to kill me if I can't do clips anymore. And I'm not really sure why. Hold on 1 second. Do, do, do. I'll have to sing with an echo. Do, 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 do. that's why. Here we go. All right, let's try this again.
Wide-ranging corruption scheme.
All right, I'm going to have to jack up the volume. All right, here we go. So anyone who knows anything about the UN, a story came out yesterday about the former UN president. So this was not, I don't even remember his name, whatever his name is. This is the guy that was before him. And this is the U.S. attorney, Preet Bharara out of New York City, giving a speech here.
Hey. Together with our law enforcement partners, we expose yet another wide-ranging corruption scheme, one that is simultaneously local and global, and it is centered at the United Nations. We unseal today a criminal complaint charging 6 individuals with participating in a years-long corruption and bribery scheme. The complaint alleges that 4 defendants representing business interests in China paid at least $1.3 million in bribes to a man who was then the President of the United Nations General Assembly and the permanent representative to the UN from Antigua.
The President of the UN General Assembly has now been implicated in millions of dollars in bribes from China. Wow, that's got to make you feel good that they are keeping their eyes out for our human rights.
His name is John Ash. Let me conclude by saying, you know, if proven, today's charges will confirm that the cancer of corruption that plagues too many local and state governments infects the United Nations as well. As alleged, for Rolex watches, bespoke suits, and a private basketball court, John Ash, the 68th president of the UN General Assembly, sold himself and the global institution he led.
For Rolex watch, suits, and a basketball court. He sold out the United Nations. I can't, when I saw this, I could not even believe it. I mean, if there is any question that the UN and this global authority is corrupt and we're allowing them, there's a whole bunch of other stories. We are allowing ourselves little by little, again, boiling frog, to be taken over by international organizations. We had talked about the labeling, country of origin labeling laws, right? World Trade Organization, all of a sudden it was declared that it was illegal for us to label our country of origin on meats. And so, whoop, we have an international organization that overturned one of our laws here in the United States, and they, Canada and Mexico, we talked about that. They were bringing up some sort of legal, it wasn't a lawsuit, but whatever they call it. They want reparations for potential future and past loss of income by us labeling that. And I don't know, we should look into what happened with that, whether or not we're going to have to pay them the millions of dollars that they said that they have faced in losses. And the reason why I'm mentioning that is because the TPP, which is very much like that in its laws and is classified, don't forget, and everyone keeps forgetting that fact. They're saying it's secret. No, it's literally classified. The TPP has raised its ugly head, and we're going to take a look at that in a second. 12 nations inked on the other day.
United in greed, the defendants allegedly formed a corrupt alliance of business and government, converting the UN into a platform for profit. I think people know by now that we will continue to do everything we can to root out public corruption, whether we find it in the city council, in Albany, or as here, in the United Nations.
Now, this Preet Bharara, The Attorney General, I'm sure he's probably for New York. It's what it sounded like, because he even mentioned Albany and the United Nations building is in New York City. He, all I gotta say is he better watch over his shoulder, because the fact that he's calling out the United Nations as corrupt and for sale, isn't gonna go over very well with these international organizations, I can guarantee you.
Let me make clear also that this investigation continues. There's a lot more work to do. And as we investigate further, we will be asking the question, is bribery business as usual at the UN?
Oh, ho, ho, ho. And there you have it. Woo, zing. So, I don't know, put on a seatbelt for that one, because I think that's going to end up to be very interesting. We're going to run out of time, so I don't know if I'm going to be able to hit the story. Maybe we'll hit it really quick. There's a story that came out of Activist Post on the 5th, 2 days ago, titled, Did the UN Really Install a Global Police Force at the Local Level? And, I mean, as we've seen police brutality go through the roof over the last few years, a lot of things that were happening when there was an identified brutality issue was that the Department of Justice was coming in and taking over a lot of these local police forces. Albuquerque, New Mexico happened to be one. I did a lot of stories on anti-media about the brutality and some of the takeovers.
This just in, the feds are now moving in on local police forces. You heard me correctly. This story is coming out of Washington. Mounting concern over recent violent crime surges in some U.S. cities has prompted the Justice Department to call a meeting next month of more than a dozen local law enforcement officials to deal with persistent public safety threats ranging from criminal gangs to domestic violence. Deputy Attorney General Sally Yates told the USA Today in an interview, the Justice Summit builds on an increasing federal re-engagement with local police whose forces in the past 2 years have been buffeted by questions over lethal force policies and flagging public trust. Earlier this year, in the face of rising tensions between the police and the public in communities across the nation, a special White House policing task force issued a slate of recommendations aimed at restoring public confidence. The Justice Department also has opened inquiries into the operations of more than 20 police departments across the country since 2009, including earlier this year in Baltimore, where days of civil unrest was sparked by the death of a local man in police custody. Folks, this is another step of incrementalism in the police state, and the loss of your freedom and the loss of the local governments to do their job. The federal government needs to stay in Washington. That is where the Constitution has defined their place. The federal government and the FBI and all the federal police forces have no business at all stepping into and working on domestic abuse issues. That's like you get in an argument with your wife and the FBI comes knocking on your door. This is where we're headed today in America? Friends, this is a disturbing, disturbing trend, and you should be very concerned about it. The federal government getting involved in domestic disputes. Out of control. Where does it end?
Yesterday, we announced a new trade agreement across the Asia-Pacific region that reflects American values and gives our working families and American businesses a fair shot. Creates a level playing field. The Trans-Pacific Partnership took 5 years to negotiate, and I wanted to get the best possible deal done for American workers and American businesses, and that is what we have achieved. This agreement makes us more competitive by eliminating about 18,000 taxes, tariffs, that are placed on America's products in these other countries. Just to give you a couple examples, Japan puts a 38% tax on American beef before it ever reaches market. Malaysia currently puts a 30% tax on American auto parts. Vietnam puts a tax of as much as 70% on every car American automakers sell in Vietnam. Under this agreement, all those foreign taxes will fall. Most of them will fall to zero. So we are knocking down barriers that are currently preventing American businesses from selling in these countries and are preventing American workers from benefiting from those sales to the fastest growing, most dynamic region in the world. If the tariffs are down, if the taxes are down on goods made in America, that means U.S. companies that are investing here are able to sell over there without a disadvantage.
They tell us that the TPP, the Trans-Pacific Partnership, is a done deal now. Negotiations are over. They just have to do a little rewrite and a touch-up, and it'll be ready to send to Obama, who will send it to the Congress, who won't read it and will be pressured into passing it. Now, if you like the Iran deal negotiated by Obama, you're going to love the TPP, because some of the same sort of things are going on with this pact, just as the Iranian pact. In other words, certain aspects, they've told us, are going to remain secret for 4 years. Now, if you were asked to sign a contract or any kind of an agreement with someone, and they told you that some of it's going to be secret, you can't see it, you have to vote on it, but you can't see it for 4 years, would you vote for something like that? And yet that is what they're asking the Congress to do and the American people to support. Now, there's an interesting aspect of this that I find rather humorous. For instance, this is an article out of the Wall Street Journal, and it shows a dairyman in a with his cows in the background and that sort of thing in New Zealand. And it says New Zealand wants to boost exports of its dairy products under the Trans-Pacific Partnership. Well, that's kind of funny, because how do you have dairymen in the United States and dairymen in New Zealand and dairymen all over thinking they're going to be able to sell more dairy products because of this pact? It doesn't work that way. Same with cattlemen in Australia and cattlemen in Kansas. One of them is going to lose. And I don't have to think too long about which one that's going to be. But you see, these trade deals don't necessarily mean that you in Kansas are going to sell more. We were going to have better industry and everything else as a result of NAFTA. It's cost us over 10 million industrial jobs. They keep telling us that it's going to be better. It's going to be better. All you have to do is get involved in these trade deals, and we're going to sell more of this. We're going to have more of that. It's going to be cheaper. It's going to be better. And we keep losing jobs and sovereignty. And we'd better wake up to this real quick, because signing these deals, quite honestly, ladies and gentlemen, bottom line, if we are selling sovereignty for a trade deal, in my book, that's treason, because you're literally selling the country. You're selling the Declaration of Independence. You're selling the Constitution. You're selling the independence of the American people for a good business deal. That does not work well in the long run, nor did NAFTA. These are very dangerous agreements, and the people pushing them behind the scenes are pretty much controlled through the Council on Foreign Relations and that sort of thing, whether it's the Chamber of Commerce or the Business Roundtable or any number of them. And it's astonishing how ignorant some of the congressmen are of the issue of sovereignty. The issue of trade, oh, they love it, more jobs. These things have never brought about more jobs.
This is something enormous. It is about a final control, and it's the United States saying there may be another power in the world, but we will be the ultimate power.
Quite explicitly, the US and the EU are saying that they want these new trade agreements to form the blueprint, the template for all future trade deals. And that means they're rewriting the rules of the global economy, and that means for everybody.
Once signed, it will cement a key part of the US government's plan to create a new global bloc that will ensure the dominance of its largest companies. To bypass the WTO, they're creating the biggest international agreements that the world has ever seen. They're called the Three Big T's. the Trans-Pacific Partnership, or TPP, the Transatlantic Trade and Investment Partnership, or TTIP, and the Trade in Services Agreement, or TISA. And they're all being negotiated in secret right now.
We only found out when WikiLeaks was able to leak parts of them.
And what's interesting is when you look across all of these deals, whether it be TTIP, TPP or TISA, China is excluded, but also Brazil, Russia, India, South Africa, they're all excluded because those are the emerging economies.
What is not often understood is that these agreements are part of a geopolitical war. This is a new war which is taking place between the United States and China. The United States is very scared of the rise of China, so it has moved to militarily encircle it through what is called the pivot to Asia, and now it's moving on to doing that economically.
The basic idea which comes across from reading US strategy papers is the construction of a new grand enclosure, and to put inside this grand enclosure the United States, 51 other countries, 1.6 billion people, and two-thirds of global GDP. To integrate Latin America away from Brazil and towards the United States, to integrate Southeast Asia away from China and towards the United States, and to integrate Western Europe, pulling it away from Eurasia as a whole and towards the Atlantic.
Of the three big T's, WikiLeaks has revealed four chapters of the TPP, which affects 12 countries in the Americas and Southeast Asia. We also obtained and released the core text of TISA, which affects 52 countries, including the EU. But nearly all of TTIP is still secret.
Nobody knows about what's being negotiated in our name. So you have these far-reaching deals which are going to completely change the face of our economies and our societies, and yet even elected parliamentarians know nothing about it.
The world's biggest corporations don't have the same problem. They have been receiving VIP access from day one, and have had abundant influence in the negotiations.
People, the likes of you and I, are excluded. Governments, to a great extent, are excluded. Those who are included are the multinational corporations.
These agreements are basically corporate ownership agreements. The funny thing about free trade agreements, as we understand them, is they often have nothing to do with trade in the sense of the mutual lowering of tariffs. What they're about is enshrining an investor rights regime in the respective countries and ensuring that corporations can run wild in the respective economies with very, very little regulation or impingement by government or authorities.
These treaties will have huge, huge implications for literally almost every critical issue that an individual citizen or community would care about: health, education, the environment, privacy, and access to medicines, and the list could go on.